Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. We're back to square one in Iran and Ukraine. The MOU is looking to be nothing more than a ruse and a deceit, a ploy to buy time and search for leverage. Much the same could be said about the Ukraine conflict. The West is not interested in peace. It is pursuing a policy of direct war against Russia. Russia has taken note. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli, in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we cross to Mark Sloboda. He's an international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with Mark here in Moscow. Two major topics we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about Iran in the first part of the program and Ukraine in the second. So, Mark, this MOU thing was just the publicity stunt, because the only thing I can glean from what is called the Memorandum of Understanding is that Trump wants to get the Strait of Hormuz open, and he hasn't been able to do that. The rest of it is just fluff. I mean, how do you characterize this, particularly since the American administration has torpedoed the MOU by its machinations in Lebanon? I can't make any sense of it, except for they want the Strait of Hormuz open, and they can't get that done. Mark.
Yeah, when the Memorandum of Misunderstanding first came out a couple of weeks ago, we talked about it as that it would inevitably be nothing but a tactical pause. And that is exactly, of course, what it is turning out to be. There was no sincerity from the U.S. side about fulfilling the terms of it or a wider peace process. And the U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance has now said the quiet part out loud to the cameras, saying that it was primarily a chance to pump the global economy back full of oil, because first, the military regime change failed, the first phase of war. The second phase of the war was the geoeconomic game of chicken, of dueling blockades, and the U.S. lost that one. Trump swerved the car because the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve was about empty, and they needed to get oil back in the global markets. So then, phase three, the Memorandum of Misunderstanding. And Vance said it's about getting oil back into the global market and restocking. And everyone knows, because we could all see the U.S. Military transport craft, the traffic, which many analysts are saying there's more military traffic there on to the Middle East now than there was during the 2003 Iraq War. And this is despite the fact that the Memorandum of Understanding clearly states that the U.S. was not to send additional forces into the region. So everyone sees where this is going. And the U.S. is attempting to erode away control of Iran's control of the Strait of Hormuz Oman off.
Yeah, depending on the day of the week, Oman, it seems to be waffling in one way. Yeah, it's difficult to say. But, you know, George, again, you know, that we have all of these points and all of these demands. I think we're all in agreement. It was primarily written by the Iranians, and out of desperation, as Mark's pointed out, Trump went along with it, knowing that he would never keep his word, which is nothing new. But George, the global economy is still very fragile. I mean, there's not a lot of ships going into passing the straits into to the Gulf monarchies and other commodities that are needed. I mean, we're still kind of on a knife's edge here, and I don't see how the Trump people can square that circle. You know, we can all lament what's happening in Lebanon and this ridiculous board of peace when it comes to Palestine, but crucially, Trump hasn't resolved that issue. Everything else can be kicked down the road. I get that. But this can't be, George.
No, that's right. It can't be kicked down the road. And so while J.D. Vance can say, well, we needed the breathing room and in order to get oil to the world markets, as if really we're preparing to hit them again. But the problem is that if you do hit them again, you're going to get the same outcome as before. And given the obvious growing unpopularity of this war, Trump is going to have exactly the same political problems as he had before. So he can't really just simply say, okay, well, we're going to really, really bomb them much, much harder than we did before. You're not going to get a different outcome than you did before. And doing things like, well, we're going to take Karg Island. Well, that is a very casualty-prone exercise. That's going to lead to serious, very serious American casualties. So Trump doesn't really have too many options. I mean, he can certainly go on delaying things and kicking the can down the road, but he doesn't have the option of escalating and thinking that this time Iran will fall on its knees. And precisely as he witnessed during the funeral delayed funeral of the Supreme Leader Khamenei, he saw there's not going to be any kind of insurrection here. There's not going to be any rebellion. The regime is not going to fall. So none of those plans that somehow, if we just hit them hard enough, the regime will collapse. None of those plans are likely to come to any fruition. So ultimately, he's just going to go on and on delaying things. But fundamentally, he cannot accomplish any of his goals.
Yeah, Mark, is interesting his reaction to the funeral. He was surprised about the outpouring of grief to the point he said that they were false tears. What does that tell us about the American intelligence community, American foreign policy in general? It is quite extraordinary that he was just very dismissive of a act committed by the United States and Israel that has just transformed Iran. It's remarkable, Mark.
Yeah, we've talked about this problem before. It is that inside of the U.S. government, the blob, the deep state, however you want to refer to it, the foreign experts, the experts that determine U.S. policy, right, that advise presidents and on Iran and Russia and China and North Korea and other states, are really all anti-Iranian, Russian, Chinese ideologues, and they present caricatured, false views of these countries and overestimate the power of the U.S. military and economic coercion to coerce these countries into a vision that they would prefer to them. And this is just another reflection of that. This has been a fatal flaw of the U.S. policy with Iran from 2025 on today. That the belief, because the experts told them so, that there's no real support for the Iranian government among the Iranian people, and if we just hit them hard enough or decapitate the right people. And once again, we heard Israel making threats against Mujtaba Khomeini, the son of the assassinated supreme leader and the new supreme leader. In fact, the son could not attend his father's own funeral because of fears of Israeli-U.S. assassination. And may I just say that Dmitry Medvedev, the former Russian president, prime minister, deputy chair of the Russian National Security Council, who led the Russian delegation to the funeral, his appearance was actually spot on for me. He looked extremely serious. And he looked angry, and he spoke against the insanity and the illegality that Russia had the U.S. had no reason to attack Iran and assassinate their leader like this. He hit all the right notes.
Yeah, and George, we see this again. You know, if future historians will tell us if this could be described as the Third World War, we're still deciding where the origin point was, a date was. But, I mean, I agree with Mark completely. I mean, the Russians have made it very clear that they will not let the government of Iran collapse. China is making the same noises as well. Mark said, earlier, it's a pity that there's no George F. Kennan in the American administration, because he was the guy that said, well, it's a lot more complicated than this, guys. Go ahead, George.
But the irony, of course, is that nobody actually ever listened to George F. Kennan.
Yep.
So he left the government already in the early 1950s, and then time and again he would advise in the United States, you know, I don't think NATO is a great idea. I think we should take up Stalin on his note about Germany and so on. And then, of course, all the way up through to the 1990s and expansion of NATO, Kennan gave very sage advice, which was then promptly ignored. But the issue really is still that ultimately there's still the Netanyahu problem. Netanyahu is apparently coming to the United States this week. We can only then speculate what it is. That this is his first visit since that fateful meeting in February when he told Trump that this is going to be an easy thing, we're just going to knock it out. So he's coming, and Trump has warned, well, I'm the boss. You know, don't worry about a thing. I'm the boss. So evidently he already knows that.
Yeah, but I mean,
who exactly is the boss here? But, you know, if we're to believe the New York Times, the Israel was planning to assassinate, the entirety of the Iranian negotiating team, Arafchi and the rest of them. So, in fact, that according to the Times, basically, it was the Americans who stepped in and gave warning to the Iranians that there's a serious assassination. But, you know, we don't have to believe it.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think it's plausible, given that all the other previous negotiators had been assassinated by Israel, but nonetheless, Trump is still stuck with Netanyahu, and as you pointed out, Peter, earlier, there's the issue of Lebanon. That Lebanon agreement gives Israel carte blanche to stay permanently in Lebanon. There's no obligation on Israel to withdraw from Lebanon. And that is obviously a violation of the first article of the Memorandum of Understanding, that the peace in Lebanon is part of this overall settlement with Iran. So as long as Israel's there, as long as Israel can just wage this war whenever it feels like it, it's hard to see how any of this is going to get anywhere. But America's hands are tied at this stage.
Well, I mean, Mark, when the president of the United States has to constantly remind us that he's in charge, what does that tell you?
That tells me that Netanyahu is going to visit the White House, and he's going to give Trump some candy out of a paper bag, and he's going to say, yeah, go enjoy this in the corner where I talk to your military chiefs about the next round of conflict with Iran. That's what it is. And Trump will sit back in the corner eating his candy, saying, I'm a big boy. I'm in charge. That's the situation. I identify a problem with Iran's position at this point. The U.S., I would say, after decisively losing the hot phase of the war in not fulfilling any of their intended goals against a what everyone agrees is a vastly inferior military force country, because their goals were unrealistic.
I want you to give your answer as a punchline when we get back. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go into a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. And at the end of the first part of the program, Mark was going to give us his assessment of Iran's problem in this whole paradigm. Mark.
Yeah, in the Memorandum of a Misunderstanding, the U.S. is using war by diplomacy to erode away Iran's control of the Strait of Hormuz, peel Oman off, and push ships through the southern corridor of the Strait of Hormuz rather than the Iranian-controlled north. And the whole last week, they have basically pushed 20, 30 ships a day through there, still only a quarter of the traffic that used to go through the Strait of Hormuz. But Iran, for a week, has done nothing. And now there are reports that they sent fast boats. But that all of that is going to lead to another naval skirmish and potentially the complete unraveling of the whole Memorandum of Understanding. But it may actually be to Iran's benefit to return to a hot phase, because their leverage is being eroded away by the U.S. right now.
Yeah, you can't reason with
no
unreasonable people. I think that's what they're going to conclude. I want to talk about Ukraine right now. All three of us have chronicled this war extensively on this program here. But now things are just kind of more clear than ever. Europe wants a war with Russia. Russia recognizes that, and it is preparing for war. We're in a very kind of clear moment right now. Ukraine is an afterthought. It's a footnote for the Europeans, and the Russians are known. And this is something I have to give kudos to Mark. Years ago, when why does Russia fight with one arm behind its back? And Mark told us here, I should look for it, is that Russia always has to be prepared for a general war with NATO. He's being proven right again. Go ahead, Mark. George, go ahead.
No, I think that's right. And I think it was clear from the telephone conversation, the kind of July the 4th call between Trump and Putin, in which Putin outlined to Trump that the Europeans are just peddling fantasies for you. They're telling you something that isn't true, that Ukraine is winning this war and that you just, you know, get one more push and Russia will lose. He says, on the contrary, just look at what's really going on the battlefield. Ukraine is not winning this war. And essentially warning him, yes, you're going to Ankara, and at Ankara, they're all going to tell you everything is going fantastically. The tide has turned. You know, Ukraine is on the march. Ukraine's on the front foot. So all you have to do is just, you know, give Ukraine everything it wants. And it's basically saying, don't do this. Now, I don't know which way Trump is going to go. You know, it's very mercurial. We don't know. But I think it is clear from any serious objective assessment that Ukraine is not winning this war, and that it is Russia that is clearly has the battlefield advantage. I mean, you know, Konstantinovka either has fallen or is very close to falling. That's a major blow. That's a serious blow to Ukraine. So this has all been a complete fantasy in which the media naturally play their role, that somehow the tide has turned and that Ukraine is on the march. It's a fantasy world, but it's what NATO, I think, needs going into this summit in Ankara.
You know, Mark, I must admit this whole propaganda push has been remarkably successful among Westerners, okay? The outside world sees it for what it is here. So they're trying to talk themselves into a different reality. And George is absolutely right. This is all curated for the entertainment and ego of Donald Trump. Which way is he going to go? I posit he's more likely not going to go for being burnt with Iran. But who knows? He needs a win, right? Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, I want to see a reality show where we put Donald Trump on one side talking about how military bigly he's destroying in Iran and has won the war against Iran and how they have no military left. And the Europeans on the other side talking about how Ukraine is winning the war in Ukraine and everything is great and Russia is being destroyed and all of this stuff. And we get to judge who is the better or more delusional propagandist out of the two of them, because we are in both conflicts living in a really obscene, surreal world of a narrative propaganda bubble that has absolutely no relation to what's going on the ground, which really is the most fatal condemnation of the Western mainstream media. And it's just blatant. Part of it is stenography, and part of it, I believe, is that it's actually driven by its own militant ideology of exceptionalism that refuses to admit yeah. Western defeat in both of these locations. But they're just absolutely silent. The Russian government officially announced the liberation of Konstantinovka, the southern end of the Kiev regime's last defensive line in the Donbass, leaving only two more big fortress settlements to go. Russian flags and videos seen flying in every quadrant of the city, and there's crickets chirping from the Western mainstream media, because even to talk about it would just go against the whole thrust of their Ukraine has turned the corner, is winning the war narrative, and just reveal it for the punctured a balloon of hot air that it is.
Yeah, but I mean, in a way, this propaganda machinery, and it's ubiquitous. It's all around us all the time. It tests one's mental faculties, but you know, I don't want to say the silver lining in this. I can't find the right phrase, George, but the Russians have made it very clear that this is not going to be negotiated. So we don't have to worry about that anymore. Okay. Now it's the mission complete, the mission, which I think all three of us kind of wanted from the very beginning. But here we are, because there is this recognition that the battlefield will determine the outcome of this conflict. I don't know if Witkoff and Kushner are still going to come for tea. I don't know. I don't care either, okay? But, I mean, this is quite ominous because both sides are going up the escalation ladder.
Yes, that's right. You're right about the diplomacy, because I think in the early days of the Trump administration, I think there was some concern that out of, you know, some misplaced goodwill or desire to take Trump at his word, and then, you know,
he's not Biden.
That's right. You know, and you know, there's still some, you know, feelings of nostalgia for the days when Trump used to talk about improving relations with Russia. So there was still some concern that there'll be a diplomatic resolution, which of course won't resolve anything. That isn't happening anymore. I mean, it's clear that the whole diplomatic impetus, such as it was, is now gone. That Witkoff and Kushner have nothing new to present. So it will continue. The next part of it is, well, what happens to Ukraine's enablers? And it's clear from the comments that the Putin made over the weekend when he visited sort of battlefield headquarters, that we're going to have to deal with this European problem down the road. I mean, this is a serious issue, and it is a serious issue. You really can't allow some of these half-mad states, you know, spouting forth, you know, slogans, you know, reminiscent of what we heard in the 1930s and 40s. This is just conducive to instability and war. So something is going to have to be done, and I think preparations are now being made for extending this war, and it's essentially making clear to the Europeans, you want this war in Ukraine, you're going to have to start paying a serious price for it, because up until now it's been a freebie for you. I think it's the warning is now, no, you are going to have to pay a serious price.
Yeah, a Soviet leader said once, you want a war of annihilation, you will get a war of annihilation, Mark.
Yes, and it was also said by the chief of the Soviet armed forces, Zhukov, that, you know, we have liberated Europe from fascism and they will never forgive us for it. That is very much what we're seeing. Russian government officials have made very clear now, there is no place for negotiations any longer with the Europeans over what happens in Ukraine. They have no place of it. And the Americans, if we needed to be reminded anymore, what's happening with the memorandum of misunderstanding is that the Americans are diplomacy incompetent and incapable. And this has to be settled, as Putin has said, by military means on the battlefield. And however long it takes, it is being done. And Konstantinovka and Liman and others are just proof of that, no matter what the U.S. propaganda says to the contrary.
Yeah, I mean, I want to finish off on another kind of peculiar new narrative that's been introduced. George, I didn't know the root of all of this was communism. Okay, I mean, wow. I was caught flat-footed on this. I mean, why is Trump talking about the communist threat?
I guess it's some feeling that, hey, it worked in the past. I mean, you used to be able to destroy people's careers by calling them soft on communism. That's kind of a long time ago. But Trump, he's quite an old man, so he does remember the early 1960s and the 70s, when really that was a good effective slogan. But remember also later on, the Republicans used another effective slogan, which is liberalism, we just hate liberalism. We hate, the Democrats are just all Kennedy liberals. And that did also work. So I think Trump is really taking out of the cupboard some old tools, hoping that that they might work.
Yeah, but the problem is, Mark, to finish off here, the younger generation in Europe and in North America, they kind of like the idea.
I would argue, not that I have a problem with it, but they don't really know what they're talking about. But, millennial. But regardless, the tools of distraction. Well, the Epstein has passed us by. A few weeks ago, it was alien files. And now the communists. Are these communists in the room with us now? Everyone raise your little black book.
Yeah, and it's all about diversion. But the problems that we have discussed with surrounding Iran and Ukraine, they're not going away, gentlemen. They're going to stay with us, and they're going to be compounded through time. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Moscow and in Budapest, and of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RTC. And next time, remember, crosstalk rules.